February 14th, Valentine's Day of 2014, PFA review. So, and I got to admit that I don't know if I've listened to others of these, so, and it sounds like we've got a pretty small group here, so yeah, I can go over some of the basics of how I would approach this, but if you got particular questions that you want to ask, just chime in. One reason I picked this one is I thought it was a little bit of an unusual situation in several regards. First of all is the time frame. This person has been in my database. Actually, I forgot to look that up, but I think he's been in my database for 4 or 5 years. He did a profile in very late 2012, but we didn't really get started in earnest in really digging into things until about the middle or end of last year. And there's a variety of reasons for that. One, he is a client that I see more of these days that he's doing something, but he wants to add another business semi-absentee, so he's not busting the gut to go do something right away. So, he didn't have any urgent thing like I got to replace my income motivating him. So that probably contributed to it. A second thing that I thought was a little unusual about this is you may have noticed, if you had a chance to look at the profile, that this guy has a very low net worth, okay? And that combined with the fact that he's looking at a semi-absentee business, at first blush you say, oh my goodness, this isn't going to work. But he told me, like many of you probably have heard from a lot of folks, that, oh, well, I've got friends or family that will invest, in his case particularly his father, which makes a little bit more sense. But since we had some time, I said, well, and his father, by the way, lived in North Carolina, actually was moving from Washington, D.C., retiring from years with the government, and building a house, his retirement home in North Carolina. But since we had time, I said, well, look, next time your dad's here, let's get together. So I took the opportunity to meet with this guy and also to meet with his dad when his dad was traveling through the area visiting his son. So I got a chance to get some more confidence that this was real and that the dad was serious about it and seriously interested in investing. I realized this morning that I hadn't given you all the financials from the dad. So what I do when I get into the situation is I have a spreadsheet that's a basic repeat of the financial section of our PFA. The dad was not going to be involved in managing the business. It wasn't even going to be in this area. So I didn't see any real need to put him through filling out the profile. But I did say that he would need to fill out the financial information, explain why, and he was very cooperative and did that. So I was able to establish good rapport with the client and with the father, but always he was saying, well, I think what we'll really do is probably the middle of 2014 or second quarter of 2014 we'll do something. But of course, this guy was always on my e-blast thing about webinars and so forth, and so the client showed up in a webinar like in, I think it was October. I'm sorry I don't have the dates right here in front of me, but I think it was about October, and it was on a semi-absentee business. I really don't remember which one, but all of a sudden, that was the impetus for him. So this is more a case where they got to say, hey, now's time. I'm ready to dig in. By that point, father had finished building his house. He was settled into his finances, and what I mean by that is he'd bought the house. He was established in it, so his financial situation was settled out. So that kind of sets the stage for it. When we got together, you'll see on his PFA that when we ask, please describe the most important thing in choosing a business, the only thing was semi-absentee. I tested for this a little bit in the interview, but there was no issue that he does financial services, wealth management type things, and he has a lot of flexibility in doing that, which was a plus. But he had no intention of walking away from that. So, really, semi-absentee things were good. So, you know, what in the beginning might have seemed like not too likely a scenario, guy with low net worth, only wants to do semi-absentee, starts getting to be a lot more attractive scenario because Dad does have the money, and Dad was very willing to invest. In fact, his goal, the father's motivation in this, was to create a legacy for his two sons, one which lives here and one who lives somewhere in Iowa. So all those things started looking good and looked like he would have the wherewithal to do the semi-absentee business. So this the outcome of the consultation, other things that came out, which I added to his business model beyond the basic things in the profile, was this idea that it would be a family business and that they might eventually want to do other things. A business that will be part of a retirement plan, not really, somewhat possibly for the father. You know, he wants to be paid back for his investment in the business, but also for the son. So a stronger emphasis on what building the asset value of the business in the long run versus short-term income and a good ROI. So those were some other additional things that came out in the interview. One other dynamic that I always worry about, and if you've handled these situations where you've got one person has the money and the other person is the one that's eager to be in the business, I was really looking, I was worried, you're always worried about the person with the purse trumping the desires or slowing down the process. I found it very interesting, and it's just an observation, that the son really took the lead role here. I mean, Dad really was following his lead. And it really became, I worked hard to stay in touch with Dad, making sure that I asked about him and talked with him occasionally in the process. And they did go through the research process together and ultimately went to Discovery Day together. But it became very clear to me that Pop was going to do what his son, the financial advisor, said to do, particularly when it came to his money. And I guess the other thing that was a little unusual about how it worked out is here's a retired person who did a 401k rollover to do the funding for the business. The three franchises that we settled on to look at were Supercuts, Menchie's, and CPR. one scary thing that happened in the process is there were two existing Menchie's locations in Louisville. Not my client, by the way, had been there for a while. And initially, the client was interested in that, got pretty interested in it. And we reached the validation point. I said, well, hey, you ought to go visit one of the locations. So he calls me up and said, hey, I finally found it, and it was all closed up with an out of business sign on it. I thought, oh, no. I said, well, try the other one. Well, you know where this is going. It was the same owner, and they both closed. So that kind of eliminated Menchie's. CPR, it's been a while now, and I don't remember if he got much traction with them, but pretty soon he started focusing in on Supercuts. And one thing that I had the opportunity to do, because this they were in the research process during the time of our conference here in Louisville in October, so I, John Olson was working with him. I said, hey, why don't you guys, while you're here, why don't you meet with this guy? And they ended up meeting with Kurt and Jen. And I think that really helped cinch the deal. I think it probably would have happened anyway, but it helped. And it kind of helped the franchisor, who at first was a little uncertain about the viability of the whole situation. But, you know, when they met this guy, they said, hey, this is a good guy. We want him as a franchisee, and now we understand the money and how that works. So in the end, I got paid. So what else you want to know?
Hey, Tom?
Yeah.
Tom, you there?
Yes, I'm here. Go ahead.
Yeah, that's great. Well, it's all this.
You're breaking up a little bit there. Say that again.
Are you keeping his job or not keeping his job?
No, I'm sorry. He was definitely keeping his job. Can you all hear me okay? If you're not hearing me, you won't be able to answer, but I hope you can hear me okay. He was determined. He had no intention of leaving his job. Okay, it became clear in the process of working with him that he was going to continue to do this work. He has a lot of flexibility. He's got, you know, a residual income from his financial services practice, and he wants to keep doing that. So he wasn't going to quit doing that. In fact, his vision, like a lot of people, was to develop multiple streams of revenue.
Okay. I throw this out to you, Tony, but Tracy, hopefully you can maybe make a note of this, that because it's kind of it's something that bothers me, and I noticed that if you look at his PFA and you look at businesses best suited at the very last page, it'll say, possibly home-based, little management, low cost, low risk. There's certain things that you could maybe apply, but, you know, I don't know about anybody else, but I'd sure like to see that last page eliminated. More often than not, I've had clients come back to me and say, well, what about, according to your profile, this thing says I should be this. And I rarely ever use it. And talking to other people, occasionally, but most people don't use it or have to find a way to backtrack because it doesn't play. Sometimes it does, sometimes it doesn't. But it's more of a hindrance to me.
It always says the same thing.
Yeah, yeah.
It doesn't matter what the person's profile is. It lists the same best businesses suited.
Yeah, actually, I do find some variation, but this guy is a Belonger emulator, right? Yeah, Belonger emulator. And the Belonger thing ends up trumping the emulator here, and he profiles not to be too strong. Average in sales. The little management thing is an issue, and John, I agree. I do think there's an adjustment that needs to be made, because a lot of times I get that with people that clearly have a good track record of leadership skills, which this guy did. In his role with financial services, he's not an individual contributor there. He actually manages a regional office and manages other financial services people. I think he's making a ridiculously small amount of money for somebody in that industry, but I don't know. He seemed to be happy with it, and thought he was on track. But, I did a lot of testing because to me one of the biggest transferable skills you need in a semi-absentee business is you got to be good at managing people. So I agree when that thing shows up and says, well, this guy should be in a business that requires little management. It's an inconsistency.
And I think what they need to know is that this is a starting point. As you meet with them and you start qualifying and understanding what business characteristics are going to work better for them, then you will together figure out what types of businesses are best suited. This is only a starting point. And this doesn't take into consideration all the information that you're going to find out when you meet with them face-to-face.
We do that, and I'll talk about how I use this thing in the meeting with the client. But Tracy, I do think it'd be interesting to survey. You got a little survey here, but I agree. I run into that particular one a lot, and I think there. I know we've only recently really bought this, and You know, I mean, not even clear to me that we have somebody that can knows how to tweak at the thing yet, but I think there's some adjustments that need to be made to it, because that's a piece that often is a disconnect. And I'll tell you how I use the profile, because I actually email it in advance to the client. I have an email that says, here's your profile, thanks for filling it out. Look it over, and it says in that email, it says, most of the time people find this to be spot on, but there may be things that you disagree with, and we'll talk about all that and more when we get together. So I set the stage there that, you know, as Tracy says, this is a starting point. And then what I do is I have a printout of it with me in the meeting, and I start my consultation process, and my approach is to start with, you know, why are you in business, and establish what I call the overall goal, the goals part of it first. You know, what are your business and personal goals? In the course of that discussion, I usually get a lot of hints about what their skill sets are. And what I do is try to test for things. If I see inconsistencies between what the profile says and other things on their PFA, like if they say, and this guy didn't, but if it says, what do you think are some of your best strengths? Well, actually, he does say this. He says, what are your strengths? People management, organizational planning skills. Okay, so he's self-identifying that's a strength for him. And it's also validated by the fact that he's employed by a company that's hired him to manage other people, and he's been doing that for a while. So, if we could get this thing to be more accurate, it would help. And it may be just, you know, and it is a tool. It's never going to be 100% perfect.
Or the ability, I'm trying to find out, the ability just to eliminate that last page if you don't want to use it.
You know, I kind of like it. And I could deal with it if you eliminated it, but
Well, I'm saying, I mean, not necessarily totally. I mean, just give the person in the field the opportunity to eliminate it if they don't want to give you the option.
Yeah, you could do that.
Hey, Tom, one other question for you, just from a process standpoint. Somebody submits the PFA, whether it be this, doesn't necessarily have to be this individual. Okay, so they submit the PFA. What's your process? Do you meet with them and twice, or do you have a conversation with them over the phone, gather, you know, build that business model, then sit down with them and make recommendations? Or, you know, how many, what's your process?
I have probably a 70 or 80 mile rule. If they're close enough that they're going to come to my office, I meet with them face to face in my office. This one actually was a little odd because Pops was in North Carolina.
Let me hang up, Tom. I'm sorry to interrupt, but meeting with them twice or once? Do you meet with them before you make a recommendation or twice?
No. That drives me nuts. I know a couple people do that, but and if it works for you, do it. But I'm too
lazy. No, I'm not recommending it. But
I'm too lazy to meet with them twice. So, I have a proposed agenda for the meeting, so I prepare them for the fact that, you know, they're gonna leave there with recommendations and things to look at. In fact, why do you ask, John? Why do you ask about the two meetings?
Well, I just know that some folks do it differently. Some folks actually will meet with them to develop a business model, and then will give their recommendations over the phone. Ironically, and then other people will sit down with them twice. You know, I've just heard different, and I'm not saying one's right or wrong. I guess whatever works for you. I'm just curious as to, you know, what.
For me,
I
really don't want space between the developing the business model part, which Sandler would call pain. That's our pain step. If you're a Sandler student, okay, mm-hmm. And you don't want a big gap between pain and presentation. So I want to do it all at once. I want them to write when their head's in it. I don't want to be calling them back someday when, you know, especially like this guy's boss is on the phone, he's distracted, and And then he says, what, you want to talk to a frozen yogurt place? Are you crazy? You know? So, you know, I want it to all happen there so they leave motivated to look at it. But the way I pre-frame it with people is I think a concern that some people have by doing it that quickly is that it will seem to the prospect like you already decided ahead of time what to show them, which you kind of did. But I just tell them honestly what our process is. I said, you know, with your profile and your financial information and the things that we have talked about, because, you know, I'd met with this guy. We had a meeting in a coffee shop just to get acquainted type meeting. So I had some indications of where he was going. I said, you know, with all that and what's available in the market, I said, I can develop let's call it a medium list. It's not exactly a short list, but it's not the longest list either. And then I said, as we have our discussion, then it becomes more clear to me particular things, and some of them start to rise to the top. So I don't think I've ever is a long time. I don't think I've ever really had – I've had people once in a blue moon, people ask, well, how'd you come up with that so quick? And I know that that's their suspicions. It's just that I was going to show those anyway. But I tell them, you know, and sometimes I'll look down at the list and I'll say, you know, I had this other thing here, but when you told me X, I realized that wasn't a fit at all. And they go, oh, yeah, okay, I see what you're doing. So I don't, you know, to me, and when I say lazy, it's hard enough to get together and meet with somebody once, but now I got to schedule a time on the phone with them to finish the consultation. Man, I want them talking to the franchisors this afternoon. So,
no, I hear you. No,
that's my
gotcha.
Okay. Hey, John, this is Brad Beck. I'm the new guy here with John, and I do have one question. This is fascinating for me, obviously, because it's so new to me. But would you mind sharing how you've obviously known this person, you've worked it for a long period of time, and it paid off, and that says a lot about just maintaining contact. How did you first make contact, or how did he first make contact with you? I see 970 WGTK on the FranNet. How did he hear about FranNet? But
yeah.
Do you remember how you made first contact with him?
Well, I think he came to a seminar I did, and it has been, you know, let me try to look at his date in FranConnect. But this would have been a few years ago.
Yeah.
And I used to advertise on the radio for my seminars. It's kind of a long, strange situation. I would not recommend it for you. There's no point in going into the details. You can't replicate this situation. But
okay.
I got a lot of people to seminars, and
yes.
So that got him in my pipeline, and he was in there.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, one other thing before I forget, and John, to your question about that last page, the one disadvantage I see to separating, to not including the last page with the client is that if you use the templated business models, which I do in Mind Map when I write up the client, all of that stuff is lifted directly off the PFA into those pre-templated things, okay? So, again, being the lazy consultant I am, I don't want to have to discuss all that stuff over with the guy, because sometimes, particularly if they're a, you know, more of an achiever, emulator, I'll say to him, I say, hey, we can go through the profile in detail, or we can go drum roll, turn to the last page, and go to the recommendation, okay? And a lot of times they like to do that. And then what I do is if there's an add or a change from there, I note it, and I show them, I say, look, I'll make this adjustment, and it'll be reflected in your model, and then I just change it in the template. But to me, it's part of tying the whole process together, that, you know, our thing hinges on the business model, and so I would be a disadvantage to not doing that. Okay, I'm not saying it wouldn't work. I mean, I did this business for 15 years without that stuff, so, you know, you can do it.
Yeah. Okay. You know, I can't let it go without saying it's kind of a bugs me a little, and I love this tool, don't get me wrong, but it is something I'm not going to give up on, is we call we call it, and I would say probably 80% of my clients now are belongers for whatever reason, in one, you know, either primary or secondary. Excuse me, but, you know, what's a belonger say? A belonger is a someone that belongs. They're not a leader. You know, they belong to something. You know, and to me, that's it's not complimentary or something that, you know, do you want to be a belonger or a leader? You know, well, I'm belong. I just belong.
John, I'm going to interrupt right now just because my husband is a belonger, but he's also a leader. He's a manager. And I think you can be a belonger and be a leader. I don't think that it's one or the other.
I don't either. I just think the word belonger is misleading.
Yeah, well,
most of my, you know, an emulator is saying the same thing. Yeah.
Well, and I think that's
kind
of, you have to kind
of
pre-frame. You have to pre-frame what a belonger is, and you might want to say something like, you might not agree with this term, but this is a personality or a style that you have.
Well, why would you even have to pre-frame it? Why not just get a better descriptor than belonger?
What would you call it?
Well, I'm not the one that designed the test or the profile. It's somebody else.
I'm just curious what you might think would
be
appropriate.
You know, something that's a little more descriptive than, like you say, to me, when you say belonger, I mean, it's not necessarily complimentary. It's like,
Hey, John, how do
you feel? Maybe that's not, appropriate for this conversation, so I'll leave it.
No, I think this is a good discussion. Yeah. Let's work on it a little bit. How do you feel about the label emulator?
I'm not crazy about that either. You know, because to emulate means you're imitating.
You're an emulator, right?
I'm an achiever emulator, yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say, you got some of that in there. I don't have very much knowledge or experience with much of anything in life, but even before I got into Franet, I actually used to teach a course in one of these four quadrant, you know, who am I kind of deals. The only one I ever saw that came close to having neutral names used colors. So you were blue or red or yellow or orange.
Sure.
But frankly, even that is, and then it has no meaning at all. But it was, you know, I don't know. I don't like red, you know. So I think for us, we have to really embrace it and know, like Tracy's saying, you know, belonger achievers, and a lot of my clients are belonger achiever. Belonger achievers, and I'll tell my clients this, I say often, you know, they may not come out of the gate and be rookie of the year, but belongers, one of their strengths is they do tend to develop strong teams. They often have a lot of empathy with the other people in their organization, and they, over time, they build a good, solid, steady business, okay? So, you know, and sometimes I say to people a lot of times, I say, don't get too hung up on the labels, you know, because you can, you know, let's talk about what it means.
I think what's important to them is to hear the values. And once they hear the values of a belonger, they can buy into what that means. Whether or not they like the term belonger or not, I think people who are belongers identify with the values that a belonger represents.
Yeah, that's a good point.
You know, one thing I do, and I'd be curious if any of the rest of you do this, but one reason I have the printout in my office is in case the person hasn't read it or they haven't bothered to share it with their spouse, which I suggest in my email to them, I actually have them read it over and have the spouse read it over. And, you know, there's a good percentage of the time that if there's parts of it that the person a little, you know, doesn't like to say that they're that way, you know, their spouse often turns to them and says, oh, yeah, that's you. Yeah. So that's helped me a lot of times. It builds credibility for us and the whole process.
Thomas, this is Charlie. Thanks for doing this, by the way. And you made a comment a few minutes ago saying, it all hinges on the model. Can you expand on that comment a little bit?
Well, our positioning, I think with our clients, or at least what I've learned and what we teach everybody, I think, is that our approach to this is to develop the model first and then make recommendations. And I always contrast that with the way most people buy a franchise is they look at a list, they fall in love with an idea, and they haven't really fleshed out what they're doing, okay? So it's important that we establish credibility with that. That's a good approach, first of all, that is the right way to do it, and that's easy to do. You know, I tell people, hey, do you want the business, do you want to serve the business, or do you want the business to serve you? Because we're going to talk about you, okay? But then we also need to build credibility that what we put into that model is accurate and authentic. And by positioning the PFA as part of that and saying, you know, we're going to, as Tracy says, it's a starting point. It's a baseline. And we may have to adjust. It's not, I always say it's not, I say it's 98-99% accurate, okay? But that gives me the opening that if there really is a discrepancy, that it's not gonna indict the whole process. So our approach to all this is develop the business model, recommend things that fit, and then as the person's going through the research, always take them back to the business model and coach them to make their decision based on the business model, not stray information that they get about the business. So, does that make sense?
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah. One thing I try to use, and sometimes it makes sense to me, sometimes not, is the meta programs. And I look back at this guy, he was balanced, which means, you know, he's not either a toward or away. Which is consistent with kind of where he was. You know, he's doing this because he wants to make more income. He wants to have more for retirement, but he's not. You know, so he's drawn towards some things, and has a little pain there that he's, you know, not where he needs to be or wants to be in the long run. But he's also not. He hadn't lost his job, so he's not like running away. He's internal. I noticed that, and I don't know about you all, but for me, internals are I feel out of control with them because I'm not okay. And to me, I don't think it quite means that these people decide based on instinct, but they don't embrace the data. They don't let the data speak to them as much as somebody who is external. And as I think about the process, this guy did some validation, and I don't know what y'all's experience has been with Supercuts, but they're very controlling to me, and they're in fact, I'm a little, you know, fussy with them about their, you know, almost discouraging people from individually contacting franchisees. That wasn't a problem for this guy. He looked at, he liked the kind of approach that they had, which is very, you know, they lay out all the stuff, and that impressed him that they were organized, they knew what they were doing, they had answers to all the questions, and he didn't need to hear from third-party people, i.e. franchisees, very much. Okay, I can't recall it. I think he was pretty happy just with listening to the validation calls, and they're recorded, okay? Procedural, in spite of being internal, he also was, you know, somebody who followed a process, and he was pretty, you know, I didn't have to, you know, rein him in with going off and doing other things, which I have another client right now who's, that's his favorite thing to do. And then specific, he likes the details. I'm global, so that's always an issue for me. But I try to make sure I get somebody like that enough information that to somewhat satiate their desire for detail, but do it within the confines that Tom ain't going to go out and learn a whole lot of details. So, and I sometimes tell them, I say, hey, I'm the big picture guy. You want the details? I'll help you find them. I don't have them. So. I don't know if that helps you. Did any of you use that part much in your work with the clients?
can I recommend that you do? Because this is going to help you with your communications with your clients in speaking their language and being able to bond and build rapport more quickly. That's what these meta programs are designed to do, to help you get some insight as to how they process information, how they make decisions, and how they speak so that you can adjust the way you're speaking with them to help them along their process of discovery.
By the way,
Thomas,
he is also
Charles.
auditory, which would also argue that this guy probably is more of a manager type person. You know, that auditory kinesthetic, visual, and auditory digital, you know, those have some implications for, you know, how the person will run things, and you know that kind of balances against the belonger thing. So I'm sorry, I cut somebody off.
No, that's okay, Thomas. Charlie, just with the follow-up on, I appreciated what you said about the model and, you know, being accurate and authentic and so forth. Would you mind sharing an example? Like, let's say with this guy, you showed him Menchie's Supercuts and CPR. And let's say he was in his, you know, let's say the second week, maybe the third week, he's had, let's say, one or two calls with the franchisor, and you're having your weekly call with him. You're touching base. You set up the framework of the call. Can you just give an example, a role play, if you will, of what that sounds like in terms of looping back to the model? You know, the guy had a conversation with Supercuts. Would you mind, you know, I'm trying to really get my head around this part of the process, and I would find it helpful.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. Most people, because the model is theirs, they kind of naturally follow it. So, again, another reason to make sure you tweak it to adjust to them. I'm trying to think of an example. This guy kind of knew what he wanted. He probably came closer to having a model framed out for himself. But I don't know if I can think of an example of it happening.
I mean, do you ask questions as simple as, you know, so you had your second call with CPR, Menchie's, and Supercuts, which do you feel like, you know, best matches the personal goal element of your model?
I probably would just say the model in general. I will tell you one thing that always worries me a little bit is that there may be a detail in the model that, you know, a particular thing violates. So, I have a little hard time going back and really saying, well, now let's go down and check off your model, make sure this thing applies, because, you know, maybe at one point they said, oh, I don't want a business that, you know, has that many employees, okay? And, you know, this guy settled on Supercuts, which is, you know, the haircut business is one of the more people-rich opportunities that we have in our portfolio of companies. So I'm not going to kind of, you know, it's not my job to tell him to, I'm not his mother. I'm not trying to browbeat him with it. I'm going to accept the fact that I guess I might bring it up if it was something that really came up in discussion. I might do it as a pre-frame, you know, and what that might sound like in follow-up is, you know, when we met before, we looked at these different options, and you know, like when I presented them to you, I mentioned Supercuts has more employees than the other two options, okay? Are you okay with that? Okay? So just
gotcha.
To make sure that but I probably would only do it if I thought he hadn't really figured out what the staffing was yet. You know, I was worried about it blindsiding him, okay?
And if I may, do you ever make an adjustment to their model? Like, you know, this is, say it was me, you know, this is Charlie McGee, you know, business model 2.0. You know, now that you've looked and, you know, your vision of what you want and your goals and so forth, that's all becoming a little clearer. And some things have bubbled up as being more important to you than maybe what you envisioned when you started. Do you ever say, well, you know, I'm going to make some, based on our conversation, I'm going to make some notes on your model and send you an updated version? Or do you just leave that to them?
I will do that. Let me give you like the whole picture, because when I get done with the model, I tell people, I said, you know, look, I think I got a pretty good start here. I windmill it back to them and say, I think we've got a pretty good start. You know, I said the business model is always a work in progress, so realize that as moving forward, if things come to light that we need to adjust it, we'll do that. One thing I think is really critically important about that is if you're not careful, particularly some personalities will perceive that you're trying to trap them with the business model. So I want them to say, hey, I said, look, this is yours. You own it. It's entirely up to you. And it's perfectly fine if you change your mind and go in a totally different direction, okay? And no, I don't really want them to do that, but I want them to know that they can change it. Very rarely I do get somebody who actually says, well, could you update my model and send it to me? But the variation on a theme that does happen in some percentage, maybe 30% of the time, if somebody goes through the first round of businesses and they say, you know, I just don't see anything here alike, okay, that is the time where, particularly if they're geographically close by, I prefer to do that in a second meeting with them for two reasons. One is I don't want to just, in a routine follow-up call, start throwing out other options. So I tell them, I said, look, if we miss something, then let's go back to basics. Let's go back to the business model. And a lot of times in preparation for that meeting, I will print out their business model and bring it with me and say, look, now that you've looked at some things, let's review. What did you like about the things that you looked at? And then what's the gap? What's missing for you? And I'll actually make a point of writing those down, and we'll talk about that. If they want, actually, I told you I'm lazy, so, you know, if they want me to go back and change it, I will. But I put it in my notes, and that often, those adjustments often then become the focus of the next round of things. Okay, let's get something that keeps the good qualities, but, you know, let's look at these other things that have, you know, less of the bad or more of the good that you were looking for in your model. So, and I think that works very well. I mean, people appreciate that, and it keeps them staying in the process, okay, and keeps them having confidence that I'm have their best interest at heart, and that, you know, we'll find something that works. That help?
Thank you. That does help. Thank you.
By the way, the other thing that I think is good about putting space, and what I mean by that is the person says, hey, I don't think there's anything here. What else you got? It's always a temptation as a consultant to say, oh, let me pull out my inventory list. Oh, we ought to talk about this, you know. I want them to have time and maybe even have another call with that franchisor that they think maybe they're not so interested in. Because I would say at least half or maybe even up to three-quarters of the time, when we go over, when we do that, what do you like and what did you not like about what you're looking at, the things they don't like really diminish. And it wasn't so much that there was anything missing. It's just that they actually were moving closer to getting really serious about one. And they were having, I guess this is a form of buyer's remorse, where they were looking at it and saying, well, have I looked at enough stuff, you know? Should I buy? should I buy this BMW without ever driving the Mercedes? You know, I mean, should I look at something else? And, you know, and sometimes a lot of times I'll end up throwing out some other ideas. I'd say the majority of the time, once we talk about the other options, they say, yeah, that's good. Let me just keep working on this. Okay. And, but that's an important step in the process for them. All right. Anything else? Is anybody there? Hello? Hello?
Yeah.
Yes.
All very helpful.
I thought you all had realized you had not yet ordered flowers for Valentine's Day and you had hung up. Anything else?
I appreciate your time.
Thanks, Tom.
You know, I always learn something by doing it, too, so it's fun. Tracy, is there anything else we need to do?
I think we're good. Thank you, everybody, for joining us. And
new guy says thank you. Looking forward to meeting everybody.
Yeah. Well, good luck. We're looking forward to it.
All right.
It's our recording.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Oh, hey.